It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Spring is here, and you can now get almost anything you need for your sunny days delivered with Uber Eats. What do we mean by almost? Well, you can't get a well-groomed lawn delivered, but you can get a chicken parmesan delivered. A cabana? That's a no. But a banana? That's a yes. A nice tan? Sorry. Nope. But a box fan? Happily, yes. A day of sunshine? No. A box of fine wines? Yes. Uber Eats can definitely get you that. Get almost anything delivered with Uber Eats. Order now. Alcohol in select markets. Product availability may vary by region. See app for details.
Jake Bayless bringing up some Stanford quarterbacks, John Elway, Jim Plunkett, Andrew Luck. Stanford's had some good quarterbacks throughout the years. CB, if you watch that Marino Elway to Marino 30 for 30, it's another good one. There's a lot of good 30 for 30s. That's one of them that I really like a lot. That trade almost happened, but it ended up being that Robert Irsay just didn't want to deal with the Cowboys. So I think the Cowboys were dealing with Ernie Accorsi, right? Yeah, Robert Irsay didn't want to deal with the Cowboys. But anyway, Jordan, you doing all right, man?
Yeah, not too bad. Kind of just that time of the year where it's spring ball and feels like it never slows down.
How'd your trip to Mesquite Horn go yesterday?
Oh, it was good. I actually ran into an old friend, I guess, from my Baylor days. One of the Baylor coaches is out there. So, kind of briefly talked with him. Then obviously talked with Lamont Rogers, Markelle Ford. With Markelle Ford, he's kind of had the same. He's a 2026, but he's kind of had the same four schools kind of in the mix for him, I guess, running the recruitment for him. And it's been Oklahoma, Texas A&M, Texas, and SMU. Every time I've ever talked to him, he always talks about how he wants to play for a defensive-minded head coach. And of the four schools there, I think it's really going to come down to A&M and Oklahoma, just being fully transparent. I think he likes Texas, but, it's really important to him that it's a defensive-minded head coach. He's emphasized that. He's also emphasized freshman playing time. And freshman playing time as a safety, it's probably going to be easier to get at A&M or Oklahoma than it would be in Austin. And he even brought that up as well with me off the record. But you're probably like, why are you talking about a 2026? Well, it's because Markelle Ford is he's thinking about committing this summer. I think he's going to commit this summer. I don't think it's going to be Texas. I think it'll be A&M or Oklahoma for sure. Texas, it's not like they've done necessarily a bad job, but it's just like he has boxes he wants checked and these other schools check them, and Texas doesn't necessarily do that.
It happens.
And when OU has Venables, who's only ever really coached the defensive side of the ball as a defensive guy, and then you got Elko, who's a former secondary DB safeties coach, defensive side of the ball guy, and now he's a head coach, those two are going to have advantages over SMU, who has Rhett Lashley, and Texas, who is Sarkisian. So
I like the fact that because A&M, Texas, and Oklahoma are in the same conference again together, that it's going to be kind of like when I really hardcore got into following recruiting and even my early days covering it. There's going to be some pretty high leverage battles between those three schools. And, Jordan, since you've been in it, and even I'd probably say this is the 2025 cycle that we're in, I'd probably say for about the last 7-8 years, there are a few battles. There'll be a couple, some Texas Oklahoma battles, some Texas Texas A&M battles, some A&M OU battles, but not as many as you'd think when it boils down to it. Typically, a lot of those battles happen pretty early because it's guys from the state of Texas that have been pretty heavily recruited that just want to get stuff out of the way, like before a senior year of football starts. So by the time you get to signing day, you kind of forget it. But I just love the fact that we're going to have some knockdown, drag out recruiting battles between Sark, Mike Elko, and Brent Venables going forward. I dig that a lot.
Yeah, and I mean, look, I mean, if the 2025 classes were to end today, A&M would probably, I think, have the best haul as of now. They've gotten a lot of really good early commitments. Landon and Rink wasn't bad at all, obviously. Texas wasn't recruiting him. We kind of broke what. Jeez.
Bless you. You know, you could mute yourself, Jordan. Have a little decorum.
Yeah. Yeah, I know, but I couldn't grab the mouse in time. Didn't want to sneeze on it. But they got Landon Rink. I really like their chances of getting Kobe Sellers when he commits on Saturday. They have Hassan Longstreet, who's a five-star quarterback from California. Yeah. Jonte Newman, who is just tucked into the tail end of the top 247. He was going to be Texas or A&M. A&M had him higher on the board than Texas did. But, I mean, this is a kid who's going to come in OV at Texas this summer. So, you know, they're putting an early class together that it isn't bad at all. And, you know, their portal class is interesting. But for an early 2025 class, I really like Texas's and I really like A&M's, because usually when you see early classes, it's filled with, like, three or four guys who could end up being pushed out of the class like by the end of the summer. And you don't see that with Texas's class. You don't see that with A&M's class. So, and I think part of that style of recruiting too is kind of just starting to go out the window a little more with NIL and portal. Like, things need to be more exact and more there just needs to be better execution and recruiting, scouting, and evaling and letting kids commit, letting kids not commit, you know. So, yeah, but I also think part of why A&M.
It still looks weird, though, because I look at the Texas commit list, and there's dudes, I mean, there's six commits, and the first five, Lance Jackson, Bo Barnes, Amari Winston, KJ Lacy, Ricky Stewart, all guys that have pluses, right, good prospects. And it's not that Brandon Brown's a bad prospect, but unless that ink is dry on the letter of intent come December, I'm just going to kind of set Brandon Brown to the side. And we talked about it. The coach that recruited him to Texas, the reason why he came to Texas, that guy's no longer on the staff. It was Bo Davis. So, and he's taking visits and SC, and there's several different schools involved with Brandon Brown. But, man, if you just take those first five, dude, that's you got your quarterback, you got – defensive line address, you know, you've got the running back. And you talk about evals, man. I think when you look at what Tashard Choice has done with the running back position, you know, yeah, they've gotten, you know, CJ Baxter. They've been able to get Jarrett Gibson, kind of the number one guy on their board. But look at the other guys they've taken, man. Like, Trey Wisner can play. Christian Clark looks like he can play. So if Tashard Choice decided, you know what, we're going to take two backs in 25 and Ricky Stewart is the one I want, he's one of the two I want, then who am I to tell Tashard Choice, I don't know if I'd do that, because he's not rated as high as some of the other guys they offered. I'm running back, Jordan, I think, is one of those positions where the Texas gets it. I think, and to an extent, we talked about it, like offensive line. Now, here's going to be some guys Kyle Flood offers, and there's guys he has offered that, man, they're not going to rank very high. They're not going to rate very high, because you look at the body types and the NFL ceiling is either tough to project or it's not quite there where some other guys would be. But Kyle Flood just likes big, massive offensive linemen, regardless of where he can find them, and he's going to offer those guys. That's just, I think those two positions, running back and offensive line, I feel good about what Texas does at both those spots.
Yeah, and also, like, with the depth – Texas is stacked. Like, Kyle Flood can fully afford to miss or to whiff on some guys, like, in terms of an eval scouting perspective, where it's like, oh crap, he's now at an early enrollee and it's a lot worse than we thought. Well, it's a good thing Flood really hasn't had many of those, you know, probably the least compared to the other coaches.
Are you surprised there wasn't more offensive line attrition after spring practice? Because I kind of am.
A little bit. I mean, they're still under the 85 counter. They're 82 right now. Could be 83 soon. But I mean, I don't know. Think about it. Kelvin Banks is going in the first round after this year.
Yeah.
Logan Connors, like, or Hayden Connors likely gone.
Hayden Connors out of eligibility. So
okay.
He's for Jake, sure.
Jake Majors could have two more years, right? Or just one?
After 24, he could come back for 25 if he wants to use his COVID.
All right. I really doubt that happens. So that's now three of your three left starters gone. Mm-hmm. Your right guard, DJ Campbell, I could see him having a good enough season to get drafted. I could see him coming back. Let's say he just gets drafted anyways. And then Cam Williams, you know, we'll give him another year to marinate at Texas. So let's say he comes back for his fourth year. You're replacing four starters, right? So, like, all the depth you have stacked up right now just gets shoved up, you know? So, I'm not really worried by the attrition we haven't seen from the O-line room. It's also, like, Max Merrill, this – I'd be very surprised if this isn't the last season Max Merrill isn't on a Texas Longhorns football roster.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so, I mean, I don't know. And think about it. Last year, they only signed three linemen. Nate Kibble, Daniel Cruz, and Brandon Baker. So, you know, I'm really not concerned by the lack of attrition there.
If you're a guy, here's something interesting. And I don't think they'll do it because you have to keep guys ready to play. And he's one of your, I mean, if you're ranking like the eight best offensive linemen on the team, seven best offensive linemen on the team, he's one of them. If you're a guy like Cole Hudson, would you contemplate redshirting this year? Like, basically use him in emergency situations only, and then at that point, if he gets the four games, it gets the four games? Or would you feel comfortable enough where Nato is your number one guard off the bench? I don't think that'll happen, and I'm not saying I've got inside information or anything. I'm hearing that, but that's just me spitballing. Like, if you're Cole Hudson, yeah, retain a year of eligibility and really use a full year to get yourself healthy. Coming off the shoulder surgery, you know, he's had some other deals, other injuries, some kind of lingering things he's dealt with. Man, just use the year to really just get healthy and put himself in a position because like I said, when Hayden Connor's out of eligibility, if DJ Campbell comes back, let's say he comes back in 25, okay, yeah, he, you know, Hayden Connor's gone, but Cole Hudson's probably your walk-in starter at left guard, or maybe it's Neto, I don't know, but it's a tough deal because if you redshirt, then do you run the risk of maybe getting lost in the shuffle or left behind? I don't know, man. These are first world problems that we're talking about with the Texas offensive line. And said it before, I'll say it again. There have been plenty of years where I've covered this program and followed this program where you didn't know if they could just find five guys who were competent enough to not get a quarterback murdered on game day.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of a good would you rather. And having Herb Hand's offensive line recruiting and offensive line is one of them. It's kind of pick your poison. I'm trying to think on like what the other good one would be.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Two guys drove to work. Neither guy wore a seatbelt. One guy got a ticket. One guy didn't. The same two guys drove home. One guy wore a seatbelt. One guy didn't. One guy made it home. The guy not wearing his seatbelt didn't. Don't risk it. Click it or ticket. Paid for by NHTSA.
I'll say this, man. Not to go down that road. There were some guys on the Herman staff that I think got an unfair rap. I think they were kind of scapegoated a little bit for some of the things they did in recruiting or just managing a position.
Are you about to say Herb? Okay.
Herb Hand is not one of those.
All right. I was like, whoa. Then who is this on?
Great guy. Hell of a guy. Always had, you know, if I was at practice, always had, you know, a nice, you know, hey, how you doing for me? Always looked happy to be alive and thriving and running around that day, but I don't want Herb Hand anywhere near my O-line evals, man. Just don't.
So we're going to get back to recruiting for a little bit.
I'll say this too, Jordan, about previous Texas offensive line coaches, man. Say what you want about Joe Wickline. Was Joe Wickline an abrasive a-hole? Yeah, he was, no question. But Joe Wickline also evaluated, offered, and got Connor Williams to Texas. You know, he knew what he was doing. He knew what he was doing. He just was just too much of an a-hole to make it last.
Yeah. Well, so I guess to just answer some questions from Chad and also some other stuff I want to get to. I think with A&M and OU in Texas, I think with A&M, OU in Texas, a big part of why it seems like those three are now splitting more recruitments than they have lately is because, like, A&M is actually recruiting the state of Texas again. Like, Jimbo Fisher didn't really do that. And when he did, usually it'd be met with some, depending on the part of the state and where the head coach went to college, it met with a little bit of animosity just because, like, the THCA wasn't, you know, huge, wasn't there often.
To say that the THSCA was less than thrilled last year when I think Jimbo had just come off of vacation and decided not to go to coaching school. Less than thrilled would be an understatement to say how the THSCA and the high school coaches felt about Jimbo Fisher last year.
Yeah.
Can I just tease this, Jordan? We got a dispatch coming in that we can't tease that, but it's interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
But yeah, so I A&M is doing a much better job in the state of Texas than it feels like Jimbo kind of really ever did. And honestly, it's not like a money thing. It's just an effort thing. Like showing up and showing these people in the state that you're located in that you actually care about them and that you're going to do the things you say you're going to do. That goes a long way, especially when the person who's in your office for 6 years prior didn't do those things. So Mike Elko in A&M, it's kind of a breath of fresh air for a lot of college or for a lot of high school staffs that will welcome college staffs to their practices and their school and all that. But, you know, I've been talking to a lot of different high school coaches, asking them, you know, what do you really think of the Sark staff? What do you think of Elko staff? And, you know, a lot of them like Elko and they say, you know, he's much better than Jimbo, but also all of them know nothing he does matters if they don't produce in the fall.
Yeah, that's the ultimate deal. You know, I'll say this though, man, Sark didn't have any ties to the state of Texas when he took the job, but I think a couple things have really helped Sark. And we're only mentioning this because, man, the dynamic has changed in the NIL era a little bit, but the state of Texas for high school recruiting, man, it's so different than any other state just because of the influence and the pull that the high school coaches have and how involved they are in the day-to-day with their kids. At least the high school coaches, Jordan, that are doing it right are involved in the day-to-day with their kids. So that's what makes this totally different. But Sark, I think, from the jump there was a realism with Sark. There was an authenticity with Sark. And like you said, the things that he told the THSCA he was going to do, that he wanted to do, he followed through with them. And he brought guys into the staff that had really strong ties in the state of Texas. Either they had recruited the state, or they were high, like Chris Gilbert was a high school coach. Jeff Banks is recruited in the state of Texas. He's been at UTEP. He's been at A&M. He's recruited in Texas pretty much his entire coaching career. So you start bringing in guys like that, you know, Bo Davis, really strong ties in the Houston area. So you start bringing in all these guys and, you know, it helps you relate to it helps high school coaches and the decision makers relate to you when you've got guys that have these strong ties, these longstanding ties that can vouch for you.
Yeah.
I don't pretend to know the inner workings of Jimbo's staff, but I don't know if Jimbo had that guy. And quite honestly, man, I don't know that Jimbo was all that interested in, this is just from what I've heard secondhand, third hand. I don't know that Jimbo was all that interested in being bothered with kind of the hierarchy, just kind of how things work in the state of Texas. I mean, you may not like it.
Yeah.
If you're a coach at those schools, but you know, you have to do it.
Yeah. He became with that 2022 class. Like, I mean, I've talked about it on the show, but like there are people who were at A&M at that time who told me Jimbo and the A&M staff were literally going on the 24/7 class calculator every day and like trying to figure out how to make the number one class in the country. And he became obsessed with it. And it's a lot easier to build a number one class in the country when there's 32 5-stars and only 4 of them are in the state of Texas. So you got to go out of state for them.
Yeah.
Like it makes sense when you bring the other context up. But high school coaches in Texas are only going to get more pissed off, right? Go recruit mm-hmm. them. So, yeah, it was a great example of like everything not to do if you're ever an SEC football coach.
Because you remember, I don't know if you remember this, and I don't know, does Rose Simon still run Fast 707 in Houston?
He does.
Okay. I don't know if you remember this, but it's Jimbo's like first week on the job. Didn't go to the THSCA board. I think the first kind of picture that got published of Jimbo on the trail recruiting was a picture of him and Roe Simon. I don't remember if it was in Houston or if it was at on the A&M campus, but talking about starting off on the wrong foot with high school coaches in the state. I mean, you go to a select 707 coach who was not very popular with a lot of the high school coaches in the Houston area at the time. Again, just from
it still is not
what I had heard, what I've been told, second, third hand stuff. And even talking to some coaches, but yeah, that was, and being pretty much unapologetic about it. Either that or pleading ignorance. That did not get him started off on the right foot. Mike Elko's got started off on the right foot. This is where you mark the spot on your it's only an hour bingo card where I talk about Matt Rhule and my infatuation for Matt Rhule. I wish more coaches, and Sark, let's just mention Sark did this. If you're an outsider coming into the state of Texas, look at what Matt Rhule did when he built his staff at Baylor and basically just try to do the same thing.
Yeah.
Like, Matt Rhule comes in and he's like, hey, who's the president of the THSCA? Oh, it's David Wetzel, head coach of San Antonio Reagan. Yeah, I don't want to meet with you. I want you to come work for me. I want you to come be on my staff. Who's one of the best high school? Joey McGuire. I don't want to talk to you. I don't want to break bread. I want you to come work on my staff. So that's the kind of stuff that, you know, Matt Rhule did that really set him apart. And pretty much, dude, Matt Rhule, like, I don't know, man. Matt Rhule could be speaking at the THSCA convention and murder a bunny on stage. And I think you'd have, like, a room of a couple thousand people like, well, you know, I think the bunny might have deserved it. There's probably a reason why he's doing that if he really did. Like, you know what I'm saying? That's how the THSCA feels about Matt Rhule and a high school coach feel about Matt Rhule, because he was authentic. He's like, hey, I want not – you need to adjust to me, but hey, I want to be a part of the football culture in this state. Help me help you kind of thing.
That's how you got to do it. I'm going to just run through some of the questions.
Yeah, Jake, well, find a three-year-old in single colleague, whatever. Yeah, I mean, you want to drop kick a six-year-old while they're blowing out their birthday candles? Like, yeah, I'm pretty sure Matt Rhule could get away with quite a bit.
Okay. But – Antoine, to answer your question, the easiest way possible, yes. Xavier Okponu, he was scheduled to come in for the spring game, didn't end up making the trip. Dylan Battle, on the other hand, I haven't really heard from him since, I don't know, earlier.
I was
going to
say, man, you or Hank, I don't know that anybody, you know what, let me look at his profile, because I can't remember last time anybody said anything about Dylan Battle.
Yeah, I'm not sure what his other OVs are. I think like USC, Michigan are some of the schools in it for him, maybe Bama at some point, but I really don't know. And then Floyd Guidry. Floyd Guidry tried to commit to Texas a few different times.
Would this shock you on Dylan Battle, Jordan? He's got a May 31st OV set up for LSU.
Yeah. Makes sense. Makes a lot of sense. And then Antoine, I actually talked about Jason Stokes last Friday. Posted him Monday, and LSU offered him yesterday. So, big congrats for him and his family. It's a big-time offer. I talked about it on the show. I'm like, look, we don't even have this kid ranked, but, like, this is seriously a kid who Texas could take a look at in a few months, because I think he's talented enough to play at a school like Texas. And you were like, well, he has a Utah offer. I like that. Well, LSU called the school and offered him yesterday. So, I'd like to think I really know what I'm talking about and have a good scouting guy. But when things like this happen, like I posted him on Monday, and as soon as the tweet went out, like pretty much the whole LSU personnel staff follows me. And after I sent him out, they all followed him, and I guess they evaled him or whatnot. But they offered him yesterday, so that makes you always feel better about, all right, I guess I do know what I'm doing. But
Antoine, but yeah. I don't know if you remember at Horns 24/7, which everybody, if you haven't been over to check out the Insider yet today, you need to go over there and check it out. But Jordan's going to start doing a weekly chat starting next week. You just need to go there, get you a sub. Reach out to me, Jordan, if you need help with that. But get you a sub and just go in that VIP chat, and like you can just load up questions whenever that thread gets posted in the morning, and Jordan will answer whatever questions you got on recruit. You can feel free to do it here, obviously. But man, if you just want to just throw anything and everything at Jordan, just go when he posts that chat next week. Just run over there and just fill it with questions.
Yeah, but hey, this is true though. Mac was a master a salesman, marketer. Go walk a dog off a meat truck, like they say.
Dude, Mac, being with Mac Brown for a little bit last year at coaching school, it was like, it's almost like walking with the mob boss, but it's the mob boss that like a mob boss amongst a groom of mob bosses, but this is like the Don, the ultimate Don, like everybody just respects him. Nobody has a bad thing to say about him. Like it's just the
until you look over and you're like, yeah, do I recognize that guy?
That aura, aura that Mac Brown has. And it was, I'll tell you what, man, it was great to see Mac, because I hadn't seen Mac in a while, and we got to chop it up for a little bit, just me and him, and it was great, man. It was great. I was asked some questions during the press conference, just got to talk to him. And, there's personal reasons why I'm forever indebted to Mac Brown. But, we can maybe get into that at some point. But
yeah, for sure. CB, to answer your question, a lot of us saw the Brandon Harris tweet. Don't have an exact timeline on when an announcement could come out, but we're definitely expecting something today, maybe tomorrow, maybe after, but something in the near future. Just, things like this, exact timelines aren't necessarily given, or times, things like that. So, we got stuff ready to roll, ready to drop. You kind of know how we work over Horns 24/7. We're going to try to keep everything under wraps and our ass. So that's kind of, what we're doing. And whenever the player announces his announcement, y'all will see, and y'all should have plenty of content to read about it over on our site, kind of how things came together, and also what the addition could bring to the Longhorns program. So,
boy, I tell you what, man, Rex is not lying. Rex St. Charles, you're not lying. The joy that Texas fans had when Joe Wickline was hired, I was one of them, because I knew, like, if you looked at the guys that Joe Wickline recruited at Oklahoma State that he turned into NFL players, I had the same thought everybody else did. What's this guy going to do when he gets access to the kind of talent Texas has? What's he going to do with the Texas offensive line at that point? But I started looking at Joe Wickline's track record at Florida, and I'm like, okay, recruited some highly rated guys, but didn't produce as many NFL offensive linemen as you would think. It was after Wickline, when Urban Meyer got there and hired Steve Addazio, that you got the Pouncey twins and you know, just some really, really good offensive linemen that came through there. And I was like, okay. And then, and right about that time that you really start diving down the rabbit hole on Joe Wickline, that was right around spring ball. And then you started to hear the stories coming out of spring ball that practice for some of those guys was just absolutely 100% miserable. So, yeah, it's just Joe Wickline has a fit that works some places, worked at Oklahoma State, worked at West Virginia, doesn't really work. It didn't work at Texas, didn't work at Florida. How was the were you covering Baylor, Jordan, the 1 year Joe Wickline was the offensive line coach there? It was at 2020, right?
Bro, I was about to say, when the fuck did this happen? Why has he not changed his Twitter?
Joe Wickline hadn't changed it? Because I don't know if he's got another job.
No, I found his Twitter. It's still like he's the current offensive line coach at Baylor, but he hasn't retweeted anything since the end of 2020.
I don't know if he's worked anywhere else since then. But, yeah, so did you hear anything about – I know the Baylor offense
was – I didn't. They only ever had Eric Mateos when I was there, and Eric Mateos is a weird fellow, like really weird cat. Listen to this shit. This is the biggest bag fumble I've ever heard in the history of bag fumbles for a college coaching career. After Baylor wins the Big 12 Conference Championship with all of Matt Rhule's players, Georgia offered Eric Mateos the O-line coaching job at Georgia. And he turned it down to stay in Baylor, only to get fired a year later, and now he's at Arkansas. Or two seasons later. But still, like, have you ever heard of, like, what? And, like, I don't know. A really weird guy. He recruited very strange kids, it felt like. Like, it always just, like, I'd be interviewing a kid about, like, something is off here. And it was just weird how he targeted them. And I thought he was really good at evaluating them. But the problem with him was he'd kind of offer everyone. So it's like, all right, like Kelvin Banks, he's a good player, but you're not getting him. You know
what's weird, though? What's weird about that dynamic? By the way, this is Jordan's opportunity to crap on the Dave Aranda Baylor staff.
Hey, I was giving Mateos his flowers for a little bit. Yeah. Like, you got to be a different type of cat to at least get a Georgia offer. You're stupid as hell for turning it down. Like, what?
What I never understood, so Jeff Grimes has been an O-line coach, right? Mm-hmm. So I always wondered, like, okay, if Jeff Grimes is an OC somewhere and you're the O-line coach, I'm not saying I'm turning this into where I'm the Bobs and you're the jump to conclusions Matt guy from Office Space, where I'm like, what would you say you do here? But I would think Jeff Grimes would have a pretty big say in what happens O-line wise, right? Because, I mean, that wide zone scheme, that's kind of his baby right there. So, you know, he can put the kibosh on. I mean, Mateos might have offered a lot of guys, Jordan, but, I mean, Jeff Grimes might have been saying, yeah, you offered this guy, but it doesn't matter because I want this guy, this guy, and this guy. So he might have just been overridden the whole time. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. And Grimes, yeah, like,
go ahead, Jordan. Sorry, I'll bring up something CB mentioned here in a sec.
Grimes just like didn't recruit anyone. Like, he didn't help in recruiting at all.
Oh well, never mind then.
Yeah. Like, it might have been the scouting and making board decisions, but in terms of building relationships with the recruits, like, Grimes wanted absolutely nothing to do with that. Same with what was his name? It was a defensive coordinator that they fired, and they hired Matt Palage to replace him.
Oh, Ron Roberts.
Yes. He also wanted absolutely nothing to do with recruiting either.
Yeah, but let's be real. Like, Dave Aranda speaking defensive evals, you know.
Okay. I know. But I'm not talking like scouting eval. I'm talking relationship building.
I got
so
you.
So if your head coach is a nut job, an odd guy, oddball, your OC doesn't want to touch recruits with a 10-foot pole. Neither does your DC. And then you have no NIL money and you're located in the city of Waco. And yeah, you were running a wide zone scheme. Like, you can understand why.
Not great, Bob. sounds like a recipe for – it sounds like pretty much what you got from Baylor the last few years. You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, dude. Hey, I want to bring something up with you, Jordan, real quick, but I got to address something CB mentioned. Yes. So there was a lawsuit between Joe Wickline, Texas, and Oklahoma State. So, okay. Oh, man. Now we got to talk about Steve Patterson. So Charlie Strong gets the Texas job, and Joe Wickline's like his first hire. Okay.
Sounds about right.
So if Wickline had left Oklahoma State for a job that wasn't a promotion, he had to pay a buyout. And I forget what the buyout is, what it was, but he would have had to pay a buyout. So if anybody remembers how that staff came together, Charlie's trying to hire an offensive coordinator. He puts together basically the shell of the offensive staff and tries to hire a coordinator. We wanted Chad Morris, but basically Steve Patterson said, I'm not paying a one-year seven-figure rental for Chad Morris. Not going to happen. I was told by multiple parties that Charlie Strong and Tom Herman talked, but Tom wasn't ready to leave Ohio State. And I don't even know how far those conversations got down the road, to be honest. I just know that there were discussions. And I think Charlie kicked the tires on a couple other guys, but ultimately he has no choice but to bring Sean Watson with him from Louisville. Well, Sean Watson, we notice we're all under the impression that Sean Watson's going to call plays, right? Because he called plays for Charlie at Louisville. Well, we get we go to the press conference and we get the list of the finalized staff. And Sean Watson's title is assistant head coach for offense. Okay, it's kind of weird. Joe Wickline's is offensive coordinator. So basically, to circumvent the buyout, they're going to give Wickline the offensive coordinator title. But everybody knows Sean Watson's calling plays. Sean Watson's doing the weekly press conference, talking about the offense. So basically, Oklahoma State ended up suing Joe Wickline. They didn't sue Texas. They sued Joe Wickline. And Steve Patterson, to show just kind of what of a solid dude he was and solidarity with his employees, was basically, yeah, we ain't got nothing to do with that. You have to deal with that on your own. So we'd get to talk to Joe Wickline a couple of years, and he'd be asked about the lawsuit, and all he could ever say, the lawsuit didn't get fought. Tom Herman was the Texas head coach when the Joe Wickline lawsuit was settled. Anytime we get a chance to ask Wickline about it, all he could say is, my lawyer or my counsel or whatever has advised me not to speak about this matter publicly. And you try to follow up, you'd be like, my counsel has advised me not to speak about this matter publicly. So that's pretty much all we ever got from Wickline. But yeah, it was wild time. His program's come a long way.
Why didn't they just make them both co-OCs?
Because
it made too much sense for Coach or Steve Patterson.
Joe Wickline was never going to call the plays, which is, I think that's the trigger Oklahoma State used to file the lawsuit.
Okay. Kyle Flood is the offensive coordinator at Texas. Has he ever called the plays?
No, but Kyle Flood wouldn't have had to pay a buyout. He didn't have to pay a buyout to Alabama. He didn't know Alabama a buyout. I don't think.
Yeah, so wait. After Wickline would say that, would you or Chip just be like, can I ask you privately?
No, the last time I remember somebody pressed about it, Mike Finger tried to press Wickline a little bit about it. And after about the third, my lawyer has advised me not to speak about this matter. I think Mike just dropped it. Like Wickline, I don't remember if Wickline, I'm trying to remember. I think there were a couple guys in the market that Wickline dealt with, but pretty much once the Notre Dame game in 2015 happened, and we pretty much all realized like, yeah, pretty much all this offensive staff's about to be fired at the end of the year. You didn't hear much from anybody on that offensive staff anymore.
Yeah, made sense. That's covering Baylor was pretty hard.
I'll tell you what, though, the two guys, that was where I got to know Jeff Traylor a little bit better when he was at Texas. And it's cool that he's bringing the team to Austin. Jay Norvell's a good dude. Because Jay Norvell ended up being the play caller for Texas for the 1 year he was here.
Bringing a team to Austin, though.
Yeah, Jay Norvell's the head coach at Colorado State.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I forgot that. I was very confused what you were meaning.
Yeah.
I was excited to see
Jay Norvell come back. And
I'm like, is he starting an arena team or something? No,
bringing Colorado State to town for the opener. Yeah. But they were gonna, dude, God, that was such a mess. But yeah, Jeff Traylor and Jay Norvell, they engineered the winning game plan for the OU game that year, damn it.
Do y'all want to hear who Colorado State added in the portal a couple days ago that is a former one-time Texas commit?
Ooh, one-time Texas commit. This could be Justin Watkins.
No, he was a Sarkisian era recruit.
Glad you specified. Because with COVID eligibility, he could be a Herman guy. Hell, he could be a Charlie guy. I don't know. A Sarkisian era commit. Hunter Modden.
No. Hunter Modden still doesn't have anything. It's
really?
Very sad. Yeah, it's very, very sad. No. It's Armani Winfield. Armani Winfield committed to Colorado State. Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
Man, you talk about, see, this is another reason why, unless you're really, really special, like the way Ryan Wingo looks special, I would never lose sleep about missing out on a wide receiver recruit.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, and I mean, it's crazy. Like, think about it. Their receivers, like, think about this right now. Texas hosted three of the top four receivers in the country in the month of April. DeCorian Moore, Jamie French, Kalik Lockett, right? All five-star players, all three of them.
By the way,
in 2022.
When you've written about Jamie French, do you have to really remind yourself to put the second F in there?
No, it's pretty easy to remember.
Okay.
Sorry,
but, jackass.
No, you're good. You're good. But no, think back though, y'all. In 2022, the receivers like Sark and everyone is losing their minds over was Brennan Thompson and Armani Winfield. Like, I don't know. You know, just take a step back. Look at how far the program has come. Because, I mean, obviously this is what all of you guys anticipated and wanted, but you don't always get what you want, as the Herman and Strong staff showed you. I don't know. I mean, it's just like everything they've done or said they were going to do is falling through. So
let me look at that 2021 cycle, the wide receiver offers. Was Winfield 21 or 22?
He was 22.
He was 22. Okay. Let me go to that list. That was the Evan Stewart cycle. See, that's one that you can. I know it didn't go how it was supposed to go for him at A&M, and who knows when NFL front offices really get to digging into Evan Stewart and interviewing him and everything. I want to know what that. I like to be a fly on the wall for Evan Stewart's combine interviews, but he's still an elite talent at that position, though, man. Just. He's a dude.
Yeah, I talked to a source up in Oregon who's in practice with Mr. Stewart every day. And, yeah, best receiver they got. And they figured that out as soon as he showed up. And he showed up late because he had to finish class at A&M. Man, Oregon's going to be nice next year. And – like, I think there's a serious chance Dylan Gabriel ends up losing his job, too. Like, I know everyone kind of thinks that, but, like, what's getting reported about Dylan Gabriel right now isn't, like, super accurate, I would say. Like, he's not doing amazing in practice and all these other things. But, and Antoine, look, I like Emmanuel Choice, too, but I'd be lying to you if, like, it just seems like incredibly, incredibly, incredibly low chances. He visited for the junior day. I know for a fact he was high enough on the board where if he wanted to call Texas and commit, he could have. But he never set up an OV, and he still doesn't have an OV set up. Texas has OV set up with like seven or eight receivers. He's not one of them. So I think that one is pretty much all but over. or it is over effectively. I don't think it'll be Texas. Jake, I agree with you. I agree with you. So,
man, so I'm just looking at the 2022.
It broke.
What broke? That broke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, we want to.
There it is. It is today. I thought it might have been tomorrow, but I guess he got it out today.
He did. He's posted a graphic. We're talking about Jermaine Lowell. He published a graphic on the Twitter machine that he is committing to Texas. So, yeah, that's big. That's a big deal. You start thinking about that stuff, man. It's let me pull up his profile here. Hold on just a second. I was not prepared for this because I didn't think it was going to pop. So Jermaine Lowell, committed to OU, and he's committed to OU last month on the 22nd, and Texas has flipped him, 6'3", 310, California kid from Long Beach Poly. In our transfer portal rankings, not very highly ranked, but at this point, man, we talked about Texas needing bodies mm-hmm. on the defensive line. Like, you just need some veteran presence. And Jordan, you got any thoughts on Jermaine Lowell? Because like I said, I'm sorry for not being prepared. I didn't think it was gonna pop during our show. So
yeah, no, for sure. We weren't expecting it to pop either on our show, but hey, that's kind of what happens with me and you. as far as it goes with Texas, I did not pay any attention to this kid as soon as he went in the portal, just because I was told by someone who is within the NIL collective at Louisville that he was going to Oklahoma and it was a done deal. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't checked back with that. I kind of forgot. And then obviously we got word ahead of time and, there's a story on our site. But, things move quickly in the portal as time has shown again and again. And at the end of the day, Texas felt like they needed another D lineman because they did. And they went and got one. Of the guys they could have got, there's a couple of JUCO guys, a couple of D2 guys. It's not great. It's very, very scarce out here. So the fact that they actually got a guy who's played Power 5 ball, has Power 5 experience, 3 years of it. Yes, it's ACC. It's not great, but it's better than nothing. That's going to boost the D-line room.
Lord, by the way, I'll let you continue, but we're going to stick with it. Eric Henry is supposed to be on with false start, but we're going to take we're going to keep going here for about 10-15 minutes to let Eric do what he needs to do.
All right, for sure. For me, I would have loved Jamari Caldwell. Even before the portal opened, I reported he was going in the portal just like I did for Matthew Golden. And he ended up at Oregon. But Jamari Caldwell was always kind of the number one realistic guy for them that they felt they had a chance with. Mm-hmm. But
yeah,
Oregon just, man, they're not fucking around. They're not even Jabbar. They're really trying to get this thing done this year. So
here's the deal with Lalay. Just looking at, I pulled this up from our Louisville site. He announced back in January that he was coming back for another year. Started off his career really strong at Arizona State and then missed the 2021 season with a triceps injury. Only appeared in 2 games his first season at Louisville because of an injury. And then in 2023, appeared in 12 games with 9 starts, 19 tackles, 5 tackles for loss, 1.5 sacks. Also had a quarterback hurry and a pair of pass breakups. So, look. It's kind of one of those deals where OU lands Dominic Williams. We've heard the reports on Jaden Jackson. We figured David Stone's going to play. We'll figure out in time what the conversations exactly were between he and Texas. But you figure he might have just saw like, hey, I may have a chance to play significantly at Texas. Probably not. Might be out of that mix at Oklahoma, or at least maybe not the role that he envisioned for himself. So, look, this is kind of the best plan you can have considering the circumstances. But rather than, you know, like you said, they would have loved to have had Jamari Caldwell, and he would be competing with Vernon Broad and Alfred Collins for high leverage snaps. But basically, you add three portal defensive tackles with Tia Savea, Bill Norton, and now Jermaine Ole, and you know, you can kind of moneyball it, kind of go team opponent by opponent to see which guys are going to play. But I mean, it's not the worst thing ever. It's not the best thing ever. It just kind of is what it is at this point.
Yeah. Antoine, answer your question. I'm looking at the depth chart right now. Definitely expect Collins and Broughton as your two starters, or at least first two out on the field. You know, we've talked about it. Starting reps sometimes won't necessarily matter as much for the D linemen, just depending on how much they decide to rotate each week. But yeah, definitely Broughton and Collins. Savea and Norton are safe bets for, you know, second starting now, considering Lole is probably figuring out how to move all his stuff to Austin right now, where I'd hope that Norton is showing up by the end of the month or sometime pretty soon as well. But yeah, so I think the transfers are all going to be given a shot. I think Bledsoe will be as well. I think Aaron Bryant as well. I mean, but Sadir, Melvin Hills, Alex January, like bringing in Lole now gives them the ability to not have to play those guys this year, because you'll have seven other guys who can play. So, and that's what you want, you know. Look, everyone was really excited with Alex January, how he showed up looking in January and how he did this spring. But, man, you don't want a freshman D lineman in the SEC. Are you kidding me? Hell no. You know, like, yeah, I know it was going to be rotational snaps still, but, like, Lole's addition now has it where Mitchell, Melvin Hills, and Alex January, they do not have to play next season. They don't. So, I like that a lot. Jake, I just read your comment. God damn it.
Let me look at his I'm trying to find some numbers here.
It is very, 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 very interesting to look at the linebacker right. group, though.
So Jermaine Lole is a 20. Let's see if I got his 24/7 profile handy. As a high school recruit, he was a class of 2018 take. So his big year at Arizona State, can't really count the COVID year. But even during the COVID year, four games, he had 24 tackles, five for loss, 1.5 sacks, a fumble recovery, two passes defense. His 2019 season, though, again, this was before the triceps injury and before he got injured at Louisville in 2022. How about 71 tackles, 10 tackles for loss, 6.5 sacks in 13 games?
Not bad. Not bad at all. Yeah, Antoine, you are right. But most of the time, those freshmen were guys like Caleb Downs or Caden Proctor, where they're so obviously a first-round pick in 3 years. Alex January is not that. I'm not saying Alex January can't be a first-rounder or these other things. But he is not the, like, borderline generational talent that Caden Proctor and Caleb Downs are and that most of the other freshmen were. So I get what you're saying, but, yeah, I'm going to bite. Sorry, that's weird.
Yeah, I'm trying to work on the flyer, trying to get our.
Yeah, I'm gonna bring in Keenan while we wait for Eric to get that cooked up and all that.
Gentlemen? What's up, gentlemen? How are we doing today?
Jordan, can you take me? Actually, you know what, Jordan, are you doing anything right now? Or are you working on anything?
No, if I need to filibuster, okay.
Yeah, filibuster. Jordan, can you hang out with Keenan just for a few minutes?
Yeah, and I will go take care of Facebook. I got it.
All right, see you, boys.